The sun rises through the gray. It happens every day. It turns darkness to color. But I can lose my way. I close my eyes and stay inside, trying to discover something in the shadow that will open me to see. I turn the key. A deeper secret is calling me. Arms folded in the night, are they yours or are they mine? They reach, trying to uncover. Our eyes search for a sign. Yours look into mine, trying hard to discover something in the shadow of the love we long to feel, soft but real. But a deeper secret is just beyond, yet closer still. The shadow slowly breaking, the sleeping child is waking. Quiet as a shadow is the song we long to hear, soft but clear. The deepest secret is right here. Such a beautiful piece, so tranquil. Well, we welcome back to Profiles in Folk and WSHU Public Radio. Mark Lemire and Twilight. And Twilight, if you may remember, if you were with us last August, is Cindy Van Empel. And they are from the San Francisco Bay Area, and they're making another swing through New England this summer. So it is good to have you back. And you guys are probably a bit excited at this point because you've got an album coming out.
We do. Yes, we've been working on it and it's going to be released this fall. It's all recorded except for one song, which we're actually going to play here, if you'll let us, as a world premiere.
We will indeed. Well, it's good. It is good to have you back. And I know last year we talked a good deal about your guitar playing because you go pretty far back in playing guitar. I think you started up doing music at age 12, somewhere around there.
You have a great memory. I started the summer the Beatles broke up.
So this year I'm going to flip things a little bit, and I'm glad you started out with that particular piece and talk a little bit more about the songwriting. And
how
your songwriting has changed over the years.
Well, it's interesting because that song that we just played called The Deepest Secret, it's on the new album, but it was written in 1985 or 86. Okay. So it's 25 years or more. And we resurrected it. Cindy heard me playing it. You must have heard me running through it. And she said, why don't you play that one anymore? Because it had been out of my rotation. It's an old song, no longer matters to me. But she sort of insisted. And now I'm really glad. And we must like it because we put it right up front here, played it first thing. So that's just a lot of old songs on this album. Not that many, but three or four of them are. And the funny thing is that they're the ones with the biggest production. This one has John Santos playing multiple percussion parts on it, and Michael Manring playing bass, and he's playing a bass solo with a strange thing called an ebow. It's a magnet you hold over the strings.
I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fascinating sound, and so it's but most of the newer songs, we tried to keep the album to just two voices and a guitar, or at least so that when people buy the album after hearing a show, they hear the show, except maybe with a little bass and drums. But we didn't want to make it a totally different sound most of the time. A few songs we got away with us, but most of them are pretty light. We tried to keep them as unproduced as possible.
Right.
What were you going to say?
I was thinking, going back to the old songs. Do you carry a group of your older songs with you as part of your repertoire that you can pluck out? This has always fascinated me because there are a lot of performers who just don't want to do anything that they did say 25 years ago. You know, I'm done with it. That was then. This is now. I'm on to new material.
Well, Cindy has reminded me that a lot of people haven't heard my old material.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's true.
The truth is, if you write a good song, it lasts a lifetime. Right. And it's not a good idea to discard it because you're bored with it. And the funny thing is, people want to hear the songs that, you know, if you wrote a really good song and they may have heard it a dozen times, they want to hear it again. That's the way songs are.
Yeah. Right.
So
well, there are a number that have been pulled out of dry dock, and there's some that have really stuck around for a long time. That's one, Practice Makes Perfect, which I think Mark played last year. That's an older song too, and it's always a pleaser. He really enjoys that one, and I think most of the people who like Mark Lemire and Twilight really like to hear Mark do that song.
Okay, do you have another older song that's going to be on the album?
Let me think here.
You can do?
Well, there's Lake of the Coheres.
I'm kind of putting you on the spot here.
Though that's your job, is my understanding. Is you always put us on the spot, and that's part of the fun of working with Steve. Lake of the Coheres is one that I wrote in 1984, before I even moved from the East Coast to California, and. Lake of the Coheres is a place in a book titled Winter's Tale. It's a novel by Mark Halperin. And he lives down in Virginia now. And it was a bestseller in the mid-80s. And now it's being made into a movie, I've been told.
Wow.
Yes, put on by the same people as Ron Howard, who, of course, lives right here in Greenwich.
Yes, right down in the county here.
Yeah, we're going to stop in. He doesn't know it yet, but we're going to knock
on.
Yeah, I hope he's not in L.A. But
pitch the song to him.
Yeah, I hope so. But Lake of the Coheres is a place in this book that is a sort of a magical place. Maybe the quickest would be like Lake Wobegon. It's an old-fashioned place that you can't really get to easily on the map. And it's always winter there. People are skating and running horse-drawn sleighs. It's sort of a dreamy place. And so this is another one where I was singing it in the airport. We were coming out here on tour a couple years ago, and we were laid out in Newark Airport for a little while.
Right.
And I sang this song, and Cindy said, "Did you write that one?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Well, why aren't we singing it?"
Totally out of rotation. Another one that, I simply hadn't even heard it. It's beautiful.
It's great. The other, having another point of view is very significant.
Yes, and I need to tune for a second.
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny how that is. It was a song that I think Mark had sort of become bored with. Mm-hmm. But when he'd produced a cassette tape, I don't know, back in the 80s, it appeared on there with some orchestration and that. But, of course, we sing it this way. Well, now that it's on this album, it also has orchestration again, but it's an entirely different sound with Michael Manring and John Santos.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates... I think the earlier recording was more of a natural sound, and this creates a mystical sound.
Mm.
It's very different and quite beautiful.
Well, let's try it.
Okay.
Mmm. In my most common dream, to Lake of the Koiwis, Lake of the Koiwis. My eyes close, and the next thing I see is Lake of the Koiwis, Lake of the Koiwis. In a big house by myself, tiny windows etched with snow, and the land lies buried deep, and we're skating on the ice as I lie asleep. I'm flying over winter trees to Lake of the Koiwis, Lake of the Koiwis. Snow, and the stars hang hard and bright in the silent womb of night. In my most common dream, I fly. In my most common dream, to Lake of the Koiwis, Lake of the Koiwis.
That is simply gorgeous. And you really should stop to see Ron Howard. I can see the either the opening credits or the closing credits.
I can see the check.
That song behind it.
Well, actually, the funny thing is, Mark Halperin did say that he wanted to show this song to probably not Ron Howard, but the music director or something.
Right.
But we all know, I think I know and you know, that the writer of the original novel has about as much pull in the music production credits of the movie as possibly the caterer.
That's right. So once you receive the option check, then you are done.
Yeah.
And you just never know what's going to happen.
Well, perhaps as a result of this broadcast, Ron, are you listening?
Yes, that's true. Our signal goes down there, that's for sure. But my good friend, who does not live too far away from me, the Celtic accordionist, John Wieland.
Wow. That's right, you've mentioned him
too. Has been in several, his music has been in a few movies. And he actually was doing a concert out in Missouri when Ang Lee, who did Ice Storm and you know,
you
a lot
told
of other
me about
things.
This that story last year. That's
did
right.
Did we? Okay. Yeah, he just went to the set with some friends. And
I'll do that if I have any friends.
Ang Lee kind of, you know, took a fancy to him. He put him in the movie.
That's right.
But then his music got cut out Oh. They used another band to do the. So he's in the movie, but it's
more
another
an extra.
Another band playing the music.
It's his visual
soundtrack.
But,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, movies are funny things. There's just so many hundreds of people that it takes to make them. Mm. And all the decisions are made by committees. Yeah. Making an album is more like writing a novel. It's a solitary experience. And once you've finished it or you've come close, you play it for friends or family or for trusted listeners, and they offer their point of view, but you've already green-lighted it.
You've pretty much made your decision.
Made your decision.
Well, I was fascinated, and you sent me an email about the forthcoming CD, and I loved what you had said. You said, I tried hard to limit the palette of sounds so that you would just use a few elements, and what struck me is that as black and white photography forces the photographer to think hard about creating a great composition because he can't use color, a stricter palette of instruments forces the musician to do a better job with what he has.
I couldn't have put it better myself.
That is very well stated.
Well, you know, it seems like the arts are all defined often by what they're not. For instance, mm-hmm. if you're going to make an album and you tell yourself that you will limit it to just the two vocalists that you would hear live at a show and just a single guitar, no extra guitars, then you've forced yourself into a box where you can only, it seems like you're limiting yourself needlessly. But mm-hmm. artists who have all the budget in the world and can do anything they want usually drive themselves completely insane.
Yeah, right.
The same way a black and white photographer will choose to highlight their composition by not using, you know. And then once you've set these boundaries, you force yourself to try to push them as hard as you can. Mm. So the guitar playing that I do is not your typical, hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. It's, I don't have any songs that just do that.
Right.
No, that's true.
Although Bob, are you listening?
He's made a great deal of money doing that very thing. Maybe you want to switch.
Do not make fun of Bob Dylan. Step number one in folk music.
You'll never get to open for him.
I hope I will
one
day.
If you do.
That would be nice. Probably not doing a burlesque of his song, though.
Right.
But, you know, it's like a lot of things. You really have to make your niche. And a lot of people do that. And so we need to do something else. You know, Mark's mm-hmm. guitar playing is really central to the music itself. And he plays a lot of instrumentals. And then, of course, we have the duet. And some songs are Mark singing with his guitar. Some are both of us. One is me. And then they're the instrumental. So there's, again, a really broad palette within a narrow range of instrumentation and voice.
Yeah, it's really neat. What went into making the album? Like, how long... Like the formation of it, when you started thinking about it. You two have been together now for how many years?
4.5 years. We've been singing
short,
for like 3 years. Mm-hmm. Not that long, no.
Right.
But once I figured out that Cindy could sing, I put her right to work.
Some people might argue the point, but okay.
That it was work?
We should point out that Cindy is an urban planner, as we went into some detail last year when you were
That's
here.
That's right. Cindy, the process of making an album is a little bit more haphazard than it is of planning, for instance, a subdivision.
Oh, no, it's much more haphazard than you think.
It was Cindy who said, if we're going to sing together, I insist that you make set lists, and we actually attempt to sing the songs mm-hmm. in the order that's on the list. Mm-hmm. And before that, it was sort of like, well, I'll sing this one, and then I'll sort of see how I feel after that about the next song.
Right. But,
well, it matters a bit, though, the order, because with the variety of the way it's presented, with the instrumentals mm-hmm. and then Mark and guitar and Cindy and Mark and guitar, I sometimes find myself sitting down when I need to be standing up.
Right.
It's a little awkward. So, yes, set lists are helpful.
Yeah. Well, you were asking about the process of what
it
is
to make
an album?
Yeah, about the process of putting the album together.
Well, we tried as much as possible to just have us sing and play together, just like we mm-hmm. are now with the microphones.
Like you would do a live.
And
concert.
Sometimes we had a drummer on maybe 4 or 5 songs. The drummer was actually playing live in the next room. And then we overdubbed the bass afterwards. So we had a live mm-hmm. thing, and then we just overdubbed the bass guy. Some of the songs, like the next song, Zanzibar Sands, we'll do that one next, was just done with me and Cindy singing live in the room. Mm-hmm. And there were no drums or anything added afterwards. It was strictly a folk song. And then I tried really hard not to add anything else. it's tempting. Two or three of the songs, like I said, there's extra. One of them has two guitars. I broke my own rule. I just had to do it. The song called for it. But we tried as hard as possible to stick to the bone. Mm-hmm. And then after the main recordings went down last October, and I spent a while piecing together the best bits. You know, we sing the song three or four times, and then you choose the chorus from this take and the verse from that take so that we can avoid, you know, all the bum notes that happen inevitably in a performance. But the fact that we all perform together, I think, gives it a gestalt that is totally different than me playing the guitar by itself and then putting a voice by itself and then Cindy sings her part. Because there's an interactive process that happens when jazz musicians know this. And folk musicians, it's the same thing. I play differently when I'm singing, too. And it all melds into one thing. If you try to take it apart, and it's like taking apart a body. You've got an arm and a leg and a torso, but it's no longer a person. It doesn't function anymore. So
I should think not.
Well, I love the concept because there, you know, as one who probably gets 10 to 25 albums per week in its mailbox, you know, so much is overproduced these days with too much, just what you're saying. Some people have the luxury of just going out and hiring a ton of musicians, you know, and then they're adding things like strings and stuff like that, and it gets a little too complex. And,
you know, there's two things.
Not listenable.
One is when people hear us live and they buy a CD, I want them to take home the CD and hear something like what they heard live.
Right.
And you're going to disappoint them if you've put in all this stuff that's no longer, it's not what they heard. But the other thing is, and Cindy's pointed this out, she got a CD from an act that we saw, or that you saw the other day, and this woman had this incredible singing voice live. But on the album, it was buried under a bunch of other stuff.
Yes, right.
So
it was a shame. I really loved her voice. I wanted to hear more of that. So that said, when we recorded this, Mark and I live some distance apart. And so sometimes he brought in a musician to, like John Santos in particular, Michael actually as well, to do some work on top of what we'd done. And he had him sort of do a variety of percussion. And part of my job on this was to say, well, too much of that, maybe not so much of this, and you know, it was heavily layered to make sure that everything was in there if it needed to be in there, but then we pulled a lot out and made it thinner, and well, thinner is not the right word, but
removed unnecessary.
It made it more streamlined.
Okay, what? Why don't we do Zanzibar?
Zanzibar Sands is a
fascinating story behind it.
Well, yeah, it's a made-up story. That's one, but it started out. It started out as a. I realized that I was friends, I don't know if everybody who in your radio audience here is on Facebook, but probably most of you are.
Yeah,
and
right.
I want to ask each and every one of you in Radio Land, how many of you are now Facebook friends with somebody that maybe you went to elementary school with and haven't spoken with in 30 years, but now you receive photographs of their kids or, you know, I started to realize that all of us start out maybe in some elementary school in New England somewhere, and then we go anywhere, that often we lose touch with people that have become adults. So in this song, the singer of the song is browsing in a bookstore and he discovers a book, a coffee table travel book, about a man who walked across Africa by himself from west to east and wound up in Zanzibar. And he looks at the title, or the author's name is this name of this nerdy kid who used to eat paste and sit next to him in school. And now he's, you know, this manly travel writer. So this is called Zanzibar Sands. I'm reading this book. The author's name is the same as this kid I knew in 1968. Alex used to live just a couple blocks away. I never knew him well, but I can see him now. To be honest, He was a funny kid, that hat he'd always wear. Kept mostly to himself, he didn't seem to care. One night I saw him on the road, headed nowhere. I offered him a ride, but he kept walking. Now that same strange boy with his hat in his hand walks across Africa to the Zanzibar sands. And I'll read his books of distant lands. It's funny how a funny kid becomes a remarkable man. Now I stayed right here and raised a family. I never traveled far, but at night I dream of far-flung places I'd never seen. I get up on that road and I keep walking. Sometimes I wonder where I might have gone if I never settled down in this Massachusetts town. If I'd stayed in motion, what if I'd planned to walk across Africa to the Zanzibar sands? So I kiss my wife and I start my day. Drop the kids at school and I'm on my way. A remarkable life can be led this way. I've got my road and I keep walking. And I'll read to my kids of distant lands. And children who grow to remarkable men. Some live right here, but some lay plans to walk across Africa to Zanzibar. To Zanzibar sands.
Very nice. That's, and you're right. That is a song that so many people can identify with. Especially if you're on Facebook.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
See, I mean, it happened to me recently, not on Facebook, but high school reunion. And, you know, all of a sudden this guy who was a football player, nice guy, but, you know, pretty much spent his time playing football and other sports mm-hmm. in high school. He sent everybody. He's out in the West Coast somewhere. He's a land developer.
Mm-hmm. I might know him.
And he has published a book about leadership styles and stuff mm-hmm. and sent a copy to everybody in the class. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, it had a lot of people thinking.
Different from what you might have expected from the football category.
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Years ago, I worked for a fellow in L.A., and he knew Lonnie Guinier. I don't know if you remember her. He had gone to Harvard and then gotten his master's degree there as well, and had encountered her there. And I was really impressed until I sort of realized, well, he's so much older than me. All those people you knew in high school, they eventually grow up to be somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Right.
It reminds me of that Annie Hall scene. You see the movie Annie Hall?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yes, where he goes back to his old elementary school class, and one by one the kids stand up as children and say, I'm a successful real estate developer, and I'm a heroin addict.
I don't know any of those, fortunately. So
now I just want to return to the album. It's going to be coming out in the fall, and it's going to be called Home Isn't Home.
That's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that fascinated me, and we've had other performers in here, but just they've sort of made casual mention, is that you funded part of the creation of it through Kickstarter.
That's right.
And I'd love to talk a little bit about that, because we've never really talked about it on the air.
Well, do you want me to give you sort of a quick thumbnail of what Kickstarter is?
Yeah, that would be fun.
Well, it's a fundraising website, and it's only for people that are doing something in the arts. If you're funding a movie or a book or an album, it has to have a very specific goal. Mm-hmm. Something has to be created at the end of it. There's no fund my life in the arts.
Right.
And so you set a goal, and the goal of, in our case, was to raise $6,000. And if you can't raise the money in the allotted time, you can make your campaign, that's what they call it,
mm-hmm.
3 weeks or 2 weeks or a month. And if you never reach your goal within the allotted time, there's like a countdown clock.
Right,
then you don't
get
any of the money. Mm-hmm. People don't actually give you money. They pledge it.
Right.
So they pledge to...
A familiar idea.
Your card. Yes, familiar idea mm-hmm. for those of us listening to an NPR station. And in a very similar way, you pledge different amounts. When you pledge $20, we'll send you a copy of the album. If you pledge $30, you get an autographed copy.
Mm-hmm.
If you pledge $500, we'll come and play a concert at your house.
Wow.
So, and they're in between mm-hmm. steps as well. So bit by bit, we managed to raise the money and we reached our goal, which was the psychological stress for me. I was like, but, you know, the interesting thing was that some people that you expect are going to pledge because, you know, somebody who's wealthy, who's always said they like your music, you never hear from them.
Mm-hmm.
Other people who are very peripheral to my life, who may have seen us at a concert, suddenly $200 is pledged.
Right.
And it's
mm-hmm.
like, what the heck? So you never know who your connections, you know, are going to assist you.
Yeah, exactly.
At the end of the Kickstarter campaign, we're like 3 hours or no, 3 days to go, but we're like $30 away.
Yeah.
And I sent out an email to everybody.
We're getting close.
The person who pledges to push us over the $6,000 mark will throw in an extra perk, which is Cindy's chocolate bourbon balls.
Fortunately, it was someone on the West Coast who put us over, because otherwise we'd be in trouble dragging those things around the country.
Yes. So we delivered them to this woman who came to one of our concerts, and I don't know how much she pledged in the end. She got the bourbon balls and something else. It was, I think, $100 or something,
mm-hmm.
all in all.
Right.
But she seemed to think it was well worth it, and... when we ran into her to deliver the candy, she had a concert tip for us. She's on the Oddfellows in Montara, California, and they have a concert series at Oddfellows Hall. And she said, you know, would you like to come? So it was a connection in several different ways.
Well, Kickstarter is an interesting way to sort of, I think, strengthen a connection with your fan base.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it tends to be so impersonal. Well, it's personal, and people show up at a small concert usually for folk music. But in this way, you know, you can really get their support for a project you're working on. And I thought that the bourbon ball thing was funny. I got this frantic phone call at the office. Bourbon balls, can you make bourbon balls? But, you know, it was
a good idea.
It was a good idea.
Yeah, that's right.
But it was nice to even be able to reach out even more personally to
mm-hmm.
someone. And,
yeah.
you know, things are going to go out in the mail to people. But this even made a more personal one-on-one connection, which was nice.
And you followed it up. You had a very good, email campaign where you're sending emails out to that really had a sense of style and had a sense of humor, and you did that little 2-minute video.
Well, it is a campaign, just like an NPR fundraising campaign.
Yeah,
you have to somehow interrupt
very
people's
similar.
Lives.
But people keep their pants on.
Yes. for the listenership who didn't
That's
see.
That's an inside joke there. Yeah.
It's an inside joke. It's embarrassing to ask for money, folks. So I made my Kickstarter promotional video with me standing there in a suit and tie, but without any pants on. I was wearing my underwear. I was wearing silly underwear. Anyway, the point is it's embarrassing to ask for money, and I was looking for a visual illustration of how it's embarrassing to ask for money. So I asked for money while being embarrassed. Anyway, somehow it worked. Mm-hmm. Yes. The trick is to somehow get people's interest with a little humor or whatever, but not annoy them so much that they... I did get several people who asked me to unsubscribe them. But this is out of a fan base of like 1,500.
Right.
But some people just didn't want to be asked for money every week for 3 weeks, which is what happened.
Well, there are a lot of performers using Kickstarter now, to do their albums. I'm glad you succeeded. And
thank you.
People will be able to get the album via your webpage.
Well, if you could go to Kickstarter and search my name, it's still there and it's still possible to pledge. But you can also go to my website, which is marklemaire.com, MarkLemaire. It's the mayor in French. But anyway, if you go there, we're perfectly happy. We've made our $6,000 goal. But if anybody wants to continue to be a supporter of this album, we will gladly include you. We'll come and play a concert at your place or send you an autographed album if you send us $30. We're more than happy to help, believe me.
Well, and I'm sure that people are familiar with CD Baby, and we do put CDs on there as well. I'm sure some will appear there. Mm-hmm. And we've also have some on Amazon. So we would like to make them available. Mm-hmm. As in any way, shape, or form we possibly can.
My whole job here is to try to get people to hear the music that they may not even know exists that actually will serve them.
Right. Because it's a difficult environment. Mm-hmm. At this time, I mean, you've got the downturn in the national economy, but you've also got so many people making albums.
Mm-hmm. Way too many.
Creating albums. There are far too many,
I think it was it Oscar Wilde who said, there are many more books that needed to be written than that need to be read.
Yeah, but there's also been such a big change in the music business.
Yes,
and, there are so many fewer artists being signed than used to be. We were just looking at this the other day with some CD that Mark has in his 4x4 with an old folk artist from the 60s who's still putting out some CDs, and she's there with another more prominent folk artist.
Jackson Brown.
Yeah, stop.
Okay.
Keep it anonymous. But it's, back in those days, it was much easier to get signed. And these days, it seems like you have to fit a certain profile.
Mm-hmm.
And they have one of those. So if they have one of those, they won't sign another one.
Right.
It's a much more difficult environment than it used to be.
And definitely.
It seems that with, some of the things that have been happening on the federal level as well, that music has become much more corporate than it used to be. And I think people really feel that, kind of the lack of variety of music.
And a lack of personal connection.
Yeah.
I don't get a personal connection with Bruce Springsteen if I go to his show. He's like a half a mile away.
Yes, right.
So that's and who can afford it?
That's why I think the house concert scene is actually a wonderful thing because it brings people in touch with the artist really face to face and also in touch with their own friends. House concerts, for those of you who aren't familiar with the term already, look it up on the web. But there are a lot of people that have continuing monthly concerts in their homes. And they might have 30 or 50 or even 100 people listening. And the performers come and play, often with no PA system or any kind of backup. It's a very personal thing, and it's the opposite of the internet and listening to people on Spotify or something.
Or at Yankee Stadium.
It's actual music right there, and the musicians are right there to talk to you. That's a reaction, I think, to the internet, where you never even have to leave your home, because we should leave our homes. We need to get out more.
Right. Mm-hmm. You need the personal interaction. And it's become a very, very big trend now, the whole house concert.
And it's a way for a musician to make a living.
Yes, because exactly.
The tradition with house concerts is that people pay to get in, and then 100% of that money goes to the musicians. It's mm-hmm. not a business. The people that right. are doing this are really patrons of the arts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They do yeah, it in love.
Exactly.
And so that means that a musician actually could make a living, which is, I've done some exploring, and a lot of musicians just don't. Peer under the surface, and they're real estate developers or lawyers or housing contractors, and they do the music after hours. Mm-hmm. Now, I actually, mm-hmm. If you peer under the surface, I'm a recording engineer, mm-hmm. and I record orchestras and choirs, but I still consider myself a musician.
Yes, well.
All right.
It's just a musician wearing a headphone and listening to microphones. It's still, you're still shaping
music.
Sound and taking an important mm-hmm. role in the sound that's going out over the airwaves right mm-hmm. now.
Yeah, we should pay tribute and say thanks to our engineer, our man behind the glass today is Jeremy Hewitt of WSHU's engineering staff. First time that he's worked on Profiles in Folk. I hope he's enjoying it. He's smiling.
He's smiling.
That's good.
He's laughing now because he actually, the thing isn't working and he's hoping nobody will notice.
Well, our guest today on Profiles in Folk, and tonight, I should say, is Mark Lemaire and Twilight. Twilight being Cindy Van Empel. They are from the San Francisco Bay Area of California, out there on the left coast. They're making a tour of New England at the moment. And this is now 2 years in a row where
thank you.
And we want to come
back
next year.
We have been broadcasting the show while you're doing a show thank up you. In Middletown.
That's true.
We'll be at the Buttonwood Tree. Or, I'm sorry, we just were at
you're
the Buttonwood
right.
Tree.
Just finished up at the Buttonwood Tree tonight.
For all of you who saw us at the Buttonwood Tree and now have the audacity to listen to us in your cars on the way home, we thank you for not having enough of us yet.
All right. We will air this so that I think yours. Your concert will be ending about 10 p.m.
Just in time to jump into your car.
Yeah,
and tune
when
in.
We go on the air, right? So we'll probably air it maybe about 20 after 10 or so. So people will be able to hear it.
And
in
you'll
their
also
cars.
Have this on the web, right? We can
stream
this later.
Yeah. I wouldn't doubt that last year's show is still up on the web, too.
We'll tell the world.
I should have checked that.
That was an interesting year last year, wasn't it, with the earthquake? Mm. And we had that earthquake after we left.
Right.
Sort of a Calamity Jane year. And then the hurricane came mm-hmm. through, like living in a Hoover.
Yeah. It's, very, very strange, strange year. Well, I want to hear, since we have you again, and, you will be finishing up, and you're probably going to do this Friday night, maybe not. This world premiere.
Oh, yes.
That
We recorded the whole album. The Kickstarter campaign says the album's all finished. We just need money to master it and produce the CDs. But then this song got written, and people enjoyed it so much that we decided we had to include it.
Okay.
And it's the theme behind this is that I realized that most of us, the whole human race, we remember most of the people that are either closely related to us, our fathers or grandfathers or mothers, mm-hmm. and then famous people, Galileo, Albert Einstein. But 100 billion people have come and gone, and we don't remember most of them. Mm. And so this song...
Even in your own family, do you remember your great-grandmother, great-grandfather?
Yeah. Great-great.
Right.
They disappear
exactly.
so rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
So this is called Dedication. And yes, this is... the first time that Cindy and I have sung this together. I've test driven it a few times at shows, but Cindy has now added her harmonies, which doubles the value of the song.
Mm-hmm. So we are honored here.
No, it's my pleasure and your pleasure, I'm assuming.
It is. Indeed.
All right. So this is Dedication. Mm-hmm. We will not be here too long, like butterflies in May, basking in the August sun that promised she would stay. All too soon, October's moon becomes December's snow. So simple and so clear, when a life is just a year. Let's dedicate this song to our friends who are gone, and pass their stories onward to the younger and the stronger. Raise a toast to all the folks lost to memory, who made the world we love and the gifts we now receive. A child shining morning face, by noon he finds a lover. They become your mom and dad, serving you your supper. Care for them as dusk descends, and they become the child again. Give back all they gave, for a life is just a day. Let's dedicate this song to our friends who are gone, and pass their stories onward to the younger and the stronger. Raise a toast to all the folks lost to memory, who made the world we love and the gifts we now receive. Remember all the folks lost to history, who made the world we love and the gifts we now receive.
It's a good New Year's Eve piece.
That's what somebody else said. They said it sounded like Auld Lang Syne.
Yeah.
I don't think it does specifically,
it
but it has that feeling.
Yeah.
Cindy said it was a good Thanksgiving song.
Yeah, good Thanksgiving. That was the other thought I had. Thanksgiving. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's a new song?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember when I wrote it. I wrote it in the desert last summer.
Did you?
Then it got worked on. I have a songwriters group that we meet once a month, five of us, and we throw out works in progress and we all beat on each other and
mm-hmm.
Basically,
yeah, it's part of the process.
Well, it isn't
metaphorically,
always.
Metaphorically, of course.
I know people that don't. It's quite a challenge to the ego when you've written something you think
they're just
going to fall down, you know, in praise, and they fall down laughing instead. Oh, Mark, we got to rework this one entirely.
What were you thinking?
Right, right.
Zanzibar Sands, for instance, was written entirely from the point of view of a phone call. It was, excuse me for bothering you. I didn't think I'd get right through. I don't know if you remember me, but I sure remember you. And then it goes on, to be honest, you were a funny kid. It's like, it's all done as if you're listening to one side of a phone call. I thought that was very clever. They didn't. They said, what's the point? Why are we doing it this way? Why don't you just tell us the story?
I loved the line in that song about eating paste because, boy, I have memories of kids doing that. I probably did it myself. Yeah. Was that white?
It was minty.
Yeah, that's right.
I want to point out to everybody that it didn't actually, it made it into the introduction, but not into
the song. Okay.
It's because, you know, there aren't that many really good words that rhyme with paste.
Paste.
Well, actually, there are. We should rewrite the song. It's not too late.
Paste, waste, taste, I don't know.
Based.
Based.
As in turkey.
Yeah, I know.
Now, I do want to talk. I mean, we were talking about house concerts, and I wanted to talk a little bit about just what it's like, the folk music scene in San Francisco, in the San Francisco Bay Area. You guys, I noticed from the web pages, over the last year, I've had a very busy time doing a lot of concerts. Are there a lot of venues and in addition to the to the house concert?
Oh no, it's hard. Actually, I know musicians that come out to the East Coast just because there's more venues here.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's very hard. I mean, I think it's hard anywhere because, like we were talking about a few minutes ago, it's just hard to. It's very difficult to get people to come out and see you, yeah. And we are. I must say, I'm proud of the music that we do, but not that many people know about us. That's why we're so glad to be here, because there's a listenership.
Right.
We're spreading the word, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's part of it, yeah.
But no, in San Francisco, there are very few venues for folk musicians.
Wow.
There are house concerts, and those are the best, but they don't have, you know, it's once a month. There might be eight house concerts a year at that particular.
Right.
So you you have to get in line.
Right. Well, and even well-known artists don't necessarily bring people out. It's a, you know, again, I think it comes back to the way society has changed. There's so many more options. You know, back in the 70s, there were, what, three channels, four if you were lucky. Maybe that was, you know, that included, you know, PBS. And maybe it didn't. And, you know, it was music, but there weren't computers and, you know, there weren't that many choices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now people, well, even things like theater have become more affordable for a lot of people.
Right.
So, you know, back then, you know, I never went to the theater and I do now. Well, of course, I was 10, but still. But, you know, I think a lot of these things have become more accessible and,
yes,
and they're promoting because their audiences are shrinking as well. You know, opera's out there, ballet's out there. Everybody's trying to get more and more people, and they're getting them. But it's, you know, the pie is only so big. And there's only so many ways people, there's only so many dollars to be spent, and there's only so many ways people think of to entertain themselves. Going out to the local coffee shop isn't necessarily the way that they think of.
Right.
So we're here to make you think that way.
Yes.
To a degree, I mean, that's true. If you're in New York City, for instance, I mean, one of the great cities of the world, in terms of folk music, the number of venues there is so small,
considering the size of the city.
That, yes, considering size and the geographic, you know, distribution.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing you have in the East Coast here is the so-called coffee house circuit, which is mostly Unitarian churches. They call them coffee houses.
Connecticut has got a lot there. Massachusetts. Lot of them may be in various churches. There are a few. There's at least three or four really thriving folk societies.
Mm-hmm. There you go. That's what I mean.
In the state. Yeah.
I don't mean by coffee house. I don't mean Starbucks.
I know what you mean, though, about the Unitarian churches, too.
Right. Thank God for Unitarians. Oh, I guess that's not the way you'd want to put it. Thank
the
somebody.
Holy Spirit.
Thank the community
for Unitarians.
So, yeah, no, we're very happy to play wherever we can. But the ideal places are listening rooms because while we do, you know, wind up playing in places where we're forming background music for people that are, you know, ordering drinks and trying to get to know members of the opposite sex, the music has different purposes. There's music for dancing. There's music to exercise, too. We went to an aerobics class this morning. They weren't playing folk music there.
They were not playing folk music.
Yeah. Then there's music that a friend of mine, Carol Denny, who you know
her
work, she once was talking with me about this. She says, you know, the funny thing is this conceit there is with folk music where you've written this poetry that's about something that you want to sing about, and you're expecting people to sit and quietly listen and get this poetry that you're singing to them and actually soak it up and not do anything else while they're listening.
Mm,
and then at the end, they're supposed to clap. And she said, that's asking a lot of an audience. Yeah. They could be picking up members of the opposite sex or doing aerobics, but no.
Right. Well, but you know, Steve, I think you raise a good point. That is, New York City does have very few folk venue opportunities, but I think it's largely because there are so many other opportunities.
Yeah, that's true.
Know,
yeah.
You've got the ballet, you've got the symphony, you've got, good grief, I mean, there's a million museums that you can't get enough of those.
Right.
And so it tends to, you know, sort of push down the number of opportunities, a variety of things. If you come a little bit outside the city, then the number of folk music opportunities really rises dramatically.
We're playing a house concert up in Vermont next summer. They didn't have room for us this summer. We only contacted them in May or something. But it's in, God, where is that place?
That's not the one in Hero. It's It's not Morristown. That's this.
It's this little tiny town.
Mm-hmm. Shoot, I can't remember.
That's not the name of it, no. But it could be. It's a little mountain town. The place is called the Music Box, and yeah. It's mm-hmm. a nonprofit. It's a real 401c3, and she has music there year round. And it's wow. you know, it's we're going to go and entertain the people that are in New Bombsbury or whatever it's called.
I don't remember what it is. Good grief. Yeah.
I'll remember as soon as we go off the air.
It's a very faint bell. But, well, you are going to be up in Vermont this coming next Thursday night.
Morrisville.
So if there are people in our listening area who are tuned in tonight, they'll be, if they're vacationing up there.
Morrisville, Vermont on the 27th.
Morristown.
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 See,
Vermont,
now you're the professional.
Right.
You have notes.
Yes, at the bee's knees.
Yes,
that's right.
It'll be Thursday, July 26th. So you just never know who may be vacationing up in that area, and if they're looking for something to do that evening, Thursday, July 26th. Do you know what time?
7:30 to 10.
7:30.
Yep.
Okay. And again, it's in Morristown, Vermont. And it is the Bee's Knees, which is on Lower Main Street in Morristown.
If you just get to Morristown and ask anybody.
Yes, right.
You'll find
yes. And if you come in and say that you heard of us on WSHU, we will...
No bourbon bowl, sorry.
We'll think of some way to honor you. Always giving away the bourbon balls.
Right. Watch that one.
Well,
I got the recipe with me.
I'll say it has been a delight having you guys back again.
And it's nice to be here, too, with you.
It's a pleasure, Steve.
Love if you would finish off with a number.
Well,
and
let's do Diamonds.
I thought you wanted to do an instrumental.
Oh, that's nothing to end. That's not something to finish with.
Okay.
We do have instrumental songs. We have way more songs than we can possibly present all in
one
time.
You want to do two? You want to...
What a nice man you are.
Why not finish off with the... Do a vocal together, mm-hmm. and then finish off with an instrumental.
Oh, okay.
How would that be? Because we've sort of neglected your guitar playing, but we discussed that a lot last year. So I thought I'd shift more to the new album and to songwriting this time.
There is an instrumental on the new album.
There will be. Okay. Mm-hmm. Good.
That's right. It's true. Mm-hmm. So this one is a song about Cindy's trip to Europe that she took. Her camping trip, where she went to Europe in 1996, was it?
Six.
A bicycle trip?
Yes. Solo.
And it rained?
A lot.
Did you become moldy?
Extremely.
And I was thinking about how sometimes the bad times turn out to be the best of times in retrospect. Cindy is always talking about that bicycle trip as one of the best experiences of her life. Mm. But... She didn't experience it that way, I don't think.
Scotland is wet and snowy, but I do love Scotland. What a beautiful place it is. Mm.
But I don't think you went to Ireland on that trip, did you?
I did not.
So that's where I get poetic license, because I said she went to Ireland.
But I did do a solo Ireland trip also, later.
So, as Picasso said, art is the lie that tells the truth.
Yes.
Diamonds on a string. A girl I knew spent a year in Ireland, raining. The coat she wore was soaked through cold, raining day and night. Years go by, she builds her life, her house is safe and dry. Still she sheds a tear for her Irish year, the best year of her life. A diamond strung on an old piece of twine, a single drop from the spring. The chance of a gem on the line of her life, a diamond on a string. Diamonds on a string. She meets a man in her 45th year, another another man, what might he have to offer? Another man, another man, a chance to spin fortune's wheel, another drink from the spring, and maybe a gem on the line of her life, a diamond on a string, diamonds on a string. Soon enough, she'll look back on today as long ago. She will see that year by year she's rising, rising. She longs to climb a mountain that is higher, higher. The path is steep, but she knows she's climbing higher, higher. She turns and now at last she sees the story of her life. From where I stand, I see her as a diamond in the sky. A diamond strung on an old piece of twine, a single drop from the spring, the chance of a gem on the line of her life, a diamond on a string, diamonds on a string. A diamond strung on an old piece of twine, a single drop from the spring, the chance of a gem on the line of her life, a diamond on a string, diamonds on a string. Thank you.
perfect ending for Mark Lemaire and Twilight. Thank you both for being with us here at WSHU and Profiles in Folk.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much, Steve. It was good to see you again.
We'll see you next summer.
Oh, perfect. Yes. You're going to have us back?
Oh, definitely.
We're nice. Coming.
We're always coming out here.
That does it.
Thanks.
Right, I wanted to keep it to about an hour. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Great. Close. You guys.